I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency under the Trump administration, is very ambitious. I learned this from a new essay at Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute from Professor Jonathan Adler, the Tazewell Taylor Professor of Law, William & Mary Law School. Professor, a very good evening to you. This is about the word endangerment. I paid attention when I read that, endangerment. That's an old-fashioned way of saying what might happen. Danger, danger, don't go near it. But it turns on the EPA's ambition under the new administration to take on something that was fixed, if I understand correctly, for at least a decade. That is the ability of the EPA to declare that there is reasonable expectation of harm or health or bad results from the climate of greenhouse gases. And that was fixed some years ago. So they're taking on something that you identify as very difficult and challenging. Why so, Professor? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening. So this all has its roots in the Clean Air Act, which Congress enacted in 1970 and last revised in 1990. And under the Clean Air Act, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency is required to take certain actions, set pollution standards for various sources of pollution when the administrator can reasonably anticipate that the source of pollution is contributing to pollution that may threaten the public health or welfare. And welfare is defined very, very broadly. Well, in 2007, the Supreme Court, in a case called Massachusetts versus EPA, held that this does not merely apply to traditional pollutants like soot and smog, but that it also applies to greenhouse gases, that greenhouse gases are pollutants for purposes of the Clean Air Act. And as a result of that, the EPA in 2009 made this finding. It concluded that it could reasonably anticipate adverse effects or reasonably anticipate that public health or welfare would be endangered by the accumulation of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and then therefore had to, among other things, adopt pollution controls on motor vehicles, on new cars and trucks, and then subsequently adopted regulations for other sources of pollution as well, following on this conclusion. And the Trump administration, rather than simply going kind of pollution standard by pollution standard and seeking to reduce the burdens of those standards kind of one by one with regard to greenhouse gases, is trying to undo all, effectively undo them all or take away the predicate for all of these by undoing this endangerment finding, by reversing this finding that emissions of greenhouse gases cause or contribute to air pollution that may be reasonably anticipated to endanger the public health or welfare. And that's a very big undertaking and setting up a very big high stakes legal conflict.
Greenhouse gases, in common sense, that never struck me as a pollutant. Is that necessary to associate them with pollutant, or is it an entirely different category?
Well, I mean, there's certainly an argument that greenhouse gases, in particular carbon dioxide, but also perhaps some others like methane, insofar as they are greenhouse gases, their effects on people or on the environment result from the accumulation of those gases and then the greenhouse forcing of those gases in the atmosphere, then causing an increase in temperature and other climatic effects, and that those effects then may in turn cause things that are adverse, you know, effects on the weather, effects on sea level rise, and so on.
So greenhouse gases are a problem because they may affect the climate. That's the understanding then.
Well, the understanding is because the accumulation of greenhouse gases, all else equal, will increase the greenhouse forcing within the atmosphere, will increase the temperature in the atmosphere. There are then other feedback effects that may happen. The EPA had argued under the George W. Bush administration that the Clean Air Act was not written to address that sort of problem, that the Clean Air Act was written to address the sort of air pollution you see outside your window in a major American city, as well as some other specifically defined air pollution problems like acid precipitation and the like. That had been the position of the George W. Bush administration. The Supreme Court rejected that interpretation in a case in 2007 called Massachusetts versus EPA. In an opinion by Justice Stevens, the court held that the definition of air pollutants in the act was sufficiently broad that it included greenhouse gases. That was a 5-4 decision. Four justices disagreed, but I certainly was sympathetic to the idea that the act was not written to address greenhouse gases and the sorts of concerns that they raised. But Supreme Court decided otherwise in 2007, and Congress has not revised the Clean Air Act since to correct or modify that judgment.
Now we come up to date, though.
Yes.
In your essay, I learned from you, there's been another Supreme Court decision in the intervening years that is a direct challenge to Massachusetts. How do I say this correctly?
Well, I don't think there's been one that's been a challenge. I mean, there have been some subsequent decisions that narrowed the scope of Massachusetts versus EPA. And then there have been some decisions that narrow the scope of regulatory authority. The Trump administration argues that those opinions may help them undo some of the effects of Massachusetts versus EPA.
This is West Virginia EPA and Loper Bright Enterprises.
Right. Those two cases. I'm skeptical of the Trump administration's argument. West Virginia versus EPA limited the sorts of things the EPA may do to address greenhouse gases, but did not challenge the underlying premise that greenhouse gases are pollutants under the Clean Air Act. And then what Loper Bright did is Loper Bright said that courts are not going to defer to agencies when agencies are interpreting federal statutes, that figuring out what the statute means is a job for the courts, not a job for the agencies. I actually think that decision makes what the Trump administration is trying to do more difficult, because before the Loper Bright decision, the Trump administration could have said, pollutant, you know, what's a pollutant, what's not? There's some ambiguity there, where to draw the line, defer to the EPA, or reasonably anticipate or endanger public welfare. There's some ambiguity there, defer to the EPA. Well, after the Loper Bright decision, courts are no longer to defer to the agency on those sorts of questions. And so that means the court's going to focus on what the language of the statute itself says and what prior court decisions have said about that language. So I think that makes it harder for the Trump administration to undo the endangerment finding, not easier. And that's one of the reasons why I've characterized this as such a high stakes and difficult deregulatory move, because it forces the administration to try and overcome some fairly significant legal hurdles.
Common sense tells me that greenhouse gases can be the product of the forest. It's right outside my window here. Is that observation useful here in the original decision, Massachusetts? Did they consider that greenhouse gases are not the product of mankind, but the product of living on planet Earth?
Well, I mean, the court didn't get into that, but under the Clean Air Act and under environmental statutes, that sort of concern doesn't carry much weight. There are lots of things that occur naturally, but that when they occur in certain sufficient concentrations can cause environmental problems. So the easiest example for people to think of would be with regard to water pollution, right? A lot of nutrients that are very beneficial for organic life in certain contexts can cause really bad problems when there's too much. So we talk about in water pollution, nutrient loading that causes algal blooms or other things that cause significant water pollution problems. Similarly, there are hydrocarbons that are generated naturally at levels that at certain levels, but human activity can increase the levels of those otherwise naturally occurring hydrocarbons to then result in greater smog levels. So the way the Clean Air Act is written, the fact that there are both natural and man-made sources of a given substance doesn't really matter for whether or not it can be classified as a pollutant under the Act. And that's actually fairly consistent with environmental law in other contexts.
I'm speaking of the decision by the court and the EPA under previous administrations to use the word endangerment when it comes to greenhouse gases. And when we come back, Professor Jonathan Adler of the Tazewell Taylor Professor of Law at William & Mary will speak to the Chevron decision most recently and how that applies to the ability of the EPA to define its own rules.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.